Mr. Martin, can you hear me okay? I believe you're muted.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, we have one final case on our calendar for oral argument today. I'm Judge Cochran. Also on the panel with me today are Judge Jessen and Judge Sleater. The final case today is A20-0661, Ronald Regino Altamirano versus Catherine Peterson. Only appellant filed a brief in this matter, so we will hear from appellant's counsel today and will not hear from respondent. And Mr. Martin, you will have 15 minutes for your oral argument today. There is a clock showing in one of the screens. Hopefully you can see that okay. It will be larger once the clock starts, I believe. And you can proceed when you're ready. If you can please introduce yourself and the party you represent at the start of your argument, we would appreciate it for our recording. Thank you.
Oh, surely. Thank you, Your Honors. My name is James Martin. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this matter, Catherine Peterson, and she is present in the room with me, however, not appearing on the screen. I'm at 607 Central Avenue, Faribault, Minnesota. And the principal point that we want to make is that the evidence that was presented at the hearing does not square with either the statute requirements or the determination of Judge Wernick. Judge Wernick based his findings on two things. Number one, that Catherine Peterson was observed by him in the early hours of January, a Saturday morning in the January, where Mr. Altamirano apparently was waking up in a car of an acquaintance and observing Catherine Peterson egging his car. And determination was made that this met one of the requirements of the statute, which required repeated intrusions or unwanted contact. A second incident, however, was not substantiated. The second incident upon which Judge Wernick based his determination, and that determination was that Ms. Peterson had accused Mr. Altamirano of being a rapist to a third person. Now, when we go through the evidence in the transcript, the only person that gives evidence relating to this is Sonia Lima. And Sonia Lima testified that she did not understand English. And she testified that on the one time that Ms. Peterson apparently came to her door, that she didn't understand what was being said, but there was something being said about someone or the city coming, or we're going to be reported, and that several days later, somebody that she refers to as the city came to.
Mr. Martin,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Martin, if I may.
Yes.
I mean, I think I understand your argument here because, you know, when you look at just Ms. Lima's testimony, she doesn't say that directly that your client accused respondent of being a rapist. But I understand, let me see if you would agree with this. If you look at her testimony as a whole, is that she's saying Ms. Peterson came to her house and threatened to call the city. And then 4 days later, someone from the city shows up and says she is, that a rapist is living there. Is that fair to say?
Well, I don't know that it is because she gives a testimony first that someone, that she threatened to call someone, and later that she referred to calling the city. There may be some inconsistent testimony there.
But there may be inconsistencies, but isn't this enough to give, I mean, so it's not direct evidence, but there's enough kind of with that the judge could make inferences. Why isn't that fair?
Yeah, well, I think that the inferences that are being made are far-fetched, for one thing. And I don't think that the conversation that is being held is clear to her. She says she doesn't speak English. And then there's references, general references to two people. One is to a man named Brujo, who apparently is the father of her child that she testified about earlier, and that she had been trying to get a hold of him and by leaving notes and so forth, but that there was mention of, I believe she talks about Ronaldo, which I take it as Mr. Altamirano, but there's no evidence that she is specifying which one was the one that was giving her a problem. The context of that was that there was some the question as to who lives at the house, not what they did.
So, Mr. Martin, if I could take you to kind of a different issue.
Yes.
The district court just said these are the two incidents, because we know that we need repeated incidents of harassment.
Yes.
You know, in this context, right? But if there are other, but the district court also said he found respondent credible and your client not to be credible.
Right.
From your perspective, if there are other incidents in the record which could perhaps qualify as incidents of harassment, isn't that something we can look at and say, well, if not this direct rapist comment, here's another situation as a court of appeals? And I'm asking you, particularly thinking about two different things, Mr. Martin. And one would be respondent's testimony. She sent another message that she had spoken to the sheriff, and it was a message saying, threatening that they were going to arrest me. And I think in response to that, your client testifies, well, those messages were not for him. But, so first of all, can we look at the record to see if there are other incidents of harassment? And if so, wouldn't a message threatening to have the sheriff arrest him be another incident?
Well, I don't know that you can conclude that from the transcript as a whole, though. What we have is accusations simply on the part of Mr. Altamirano, and we have references to what the police report says, but the police report wasn't introduced into evidence, wasn't received into evidence, and Judge Wernick specifically said that he was not considering the other matters because of I don't recall exactly, but my understanding is that he didn't believe they were credible. But at least he was not going to consider them because they were confusing, if nothing else.
And just to be clear, Mr. Martin, what I read you is from the transcript, not from a document that's an exhibit.
Sure. Okay. Yes, I agree. I don't think that the transcript discloses anything that is really suggestive of harassment. There's an incident where there is some textual communication, but I don't think that it rises to the level of a threat. And I also think that you have to take a look at the situation from the context of First Amendment rights. You have to interpret within the context of that, giving the statute the reading that would presume that it is being interpreted constitutionally. You have words like unwanted conduct, which puts a purely subjective standard on any violation, anything that anybody doesn't want a person to do. And I also think that you have to interpret it in the context of free speech and the ability of people to speak. So I think that when we interpret a statute, we have to interpret it in terms of its being constitutional and within constitutional bounds. I think that the language that would have been used in these situations certainly would have been within the realm of protected speech.
I just want to briefly ask you a question about your due process argument. Would you agree that to prevail on the due process argument, you need to show some prejudice, or your client would need to demonstrate prejudice?
I think that...
let me rephrase it.
Yeah.
What prejudice, if any, is there to your client from the alleged due process violations?
Well, if she makes an accusation that somebody violates the law, either a traffic law where a person doesn't have a license and it's accurate, and she reports it to the police, or where there's an accusation that somebody committed a rape, or that somebody is harboring somebody that committed a rape, and without knowing more about it, the due process is that they're deprived of free speech, for one thing, but the due process is that they're not having the opportunity to exercise the same free speech that other people would be allowed to do. The situation is that the evidentiary ruling another point that was not made in my main argument was that it is incredulous that this man would fear that somebody was going to go out and hire a hitman for her, that the appellant was going to go out and hire a hitman, which was his direct testimony. And I think that that is a clear evidence of a lack of truthfulness. Now, credibility is the province of the judge, but certainly has to be judged by a standard that is clear. And for this man to say, "I'm so fearful, I'm psychologically affected by this, and I believe she's going to go out and hire a hitman to hit me because of what happened, the egging of a car and the reporting of things to the police," it just doesn't meet a third standard of the statute. Regardless of what may have been said in text messages or in notes, the evidence that there was a note on the car to Brujo, which is uncontradictedly a nickname, is not something that would, I think, pass be a credible evidence. And I think it would be clear error.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Martin. Your time is up. I'll just check to see if either of the other panel members have any questions. It doesn't appear that there are any further questions for you, Mr. Martin. So thank you very much for your argument today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.